Welcome to episode 12 of the Views from 314 Feet podcast on the Pictureless Podcast Network. It's Randy Wilkins, and as always, I'm joined by Yankees beat reporter from The Athletic, Chris Kirshner. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing well. To give some insight into how this podcast came about, I texted Randy probably 5 minutes ago asking if he wanted to record. So we have no plan. We'll see how this show goes.
So it's a total freestyle. I'm sure we have stuff to talk about. Tim is not happy that I'm doing this though. He's like all over me. So we might be hearing from Tim. He might make a cameo and give his thoughts on the Yankees and us recording this podcast. But that's where we're at. How are we feeling about your Knicks?
I mean, I feel much better after what was it, Tuesday? You know, going into game six on the road, it's always a tough, you know, it's always tough, but that just gave us some breathing room. There's Tim right there.
Tim is on one right now.
But yeah, I think the Knicks, they're in a good spot. Like I was telling you, I think off air, but you know, 2 of 3 at MSG was huge for them. I fully expect them to win the series, whether it's game six or seven. Really doesn't matter. I expect them to advance.
Yeah, I'm with you. They'll take that series. I don't really like Indiana. I think I told you that off air too. Like, I don't really like that team. Not to take anything away from what the Knicks are doing, but I think Indiana is like fraudulent and a lot of puffing out of the chest when the Knicks could barely run up and down the court in game four, and then they get smacked in game five. So. Yeah, I think we'll see Celtics, Knicks, and hopefully we see the Rangers in the Eastern Conference Finals too when they play tonight in Carolina. Hopefully they don't choke and remind us of another New York team from the early 2000s that we won't talk about right now. So
I was actually talking to one of my friends the other day about how he asked me, like, when was the last time I thought about the ALCS that you're obviously referencing. And I said 2 years ago, because Aaron Boone told the reporters, including I, that he used that series, like the clips of that series, as motivation. It was one of the most, like, the wildest thing I've ever heard. It's like he's using clips of the Yankees losing as motivation. I was like, what? Like, what is going on here? Like, when they were down 3-0 to the Astros in the ALCS, I couldn't believe it.
Aaron Boone is having a good year this year, so I'm going to leave him alone. If you follow me long enough on Twitter, you know how I feel about Aaron Boone. He's a very good man manager, but the baseball side, I'm not the biggest fan. So
he has done a great job this year.
He has, absolutely. I'll give him credit for that.
He certainly has done a great job.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely agree with that. I think this has been his best year so far.
Yes.
As a Yankees manager. All right. So we're recording this right after the Yankees sweep the Minnesota Twins. I mean, they look great. I mean, this was a great road trip. They went to Tampa. They went to Minnesota. It's 5-1 road trip. Tampa is obviously historically a place where the Yankees have mixed results, and I mean they clearly look like the better team for the majority of that series. They go to Minnesota, a place that is home to them, but they didn't do as well last year against Minnesota, and they clearly look better than Minnesota. There was I think that there's a pretty big gap in talent between the two teams. And then there was just a huge gap in performance between the two teams. And I'm not sure how the Twins won 12 in a row. Maybe they played the White Sox like 9 of those times, maybe, but they were unimpressive. And to me, the Yankees did what good teams do, is take care of business against inferior teams, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, after the first batter of the first game, Ryan Jeffers, who's been actually one of the best hitters in baseball this season, he has a higher OPS than Aaron Judge and Juan Soto. But other than that, they scored zero runs for the rest of the three games. I think it's certainly important to note just like how incredible the Yankee starting pitching has been. Like, I don't think anybody would have expected this. I think even like the most positive Yankees fan, honestly, if you probably injected truth serum into Matt Blake and Aaron Boone and whoever else you want to ask, they probably didn't expect this level of performance from the starting pitchers after they lost Gerrit Cole. Right now, I'm looking here. The Yankees have allowed just 3.3 runs per game. That's the fewest in baseball. And that is without the reigning American League Cy Young winner. I mean, I don't know who could have expected this. I mean, Clark Schmidt has a 2.5 ERA. Luis Gil, 2.5 ERA. You know, even I did a mailbag in The Athletic today. And someone mentioned that, you know, Nestor Cortez has been the worst starter. He's like the weak link. And it's like, one, I probably would still say Marcus Stroman, even though he pitched well yesterday. But again, it's like, that's a good problem to have if we're talking about, you know, Nestor and Stroman being, you know, two of the weaker links. And Nestor has the highest ERA and it's 4.09. A lot of rotations across baseball would take someone with a 4.09 ERA as your weakest link. So, I mean, it's a credit to Matt Blake. It's a credit to the five guys that have really stepped up in Cole's absence, because it's been amazing to watch them do what they've done. Like, there hasn't been one, I think what's crazy is there hasn't been one outing, and we're in mid-May, that they've just had to like burn the bullpen. I don't think they've had a starting pitcher go fewer than four innings this year, which again is pretty remarkable considering, you know, obviously it's still relatively early, but there have been 45 games played and we haven't had that outing yet from any of the starters where they go two innings and they give up seven runs. Like, how many times did we watch in Minnesota? I remember last year, Johnny Brito gave up like eight runs or something in like one inning. Like, right. We haven't had that outing yet from the starting pitchers this year, which I feel like is a good sign for the state of the rotation.
Yeah, even in the games where they've struggled, the starters have kind of been able to limit the damage, you know, relatively speaking. That I remember a couple Stroman outings where he wasn't at his best, but again, like you said, it wasn't a situation where they got blown out and the Yankees just didn't have a chance to win the game, and that the bullpen had to take the majority of the innings. Nestor, even with his struggles on the road, he's still competing. He's still giving them innings. He's still keeping the team in the game. So, yeah, I can't remember a starting performance where even when someone's not at their best, they're still not able to keep the team in the game, which is also, I think, a great sign because, as we know, starters aren't always going to be on. They're not going to have their best stuff. Their mechanics might be off. But being able to find that one pitch or that one sequence that works to help a very good offense still have a chance to win a baseball game, to me, is always a good sign of a good rotation. And to address what you said earlier, I mean, I consider myself one of the most positive Yankees fans, and I didn't expect this level of performance from the starters at all. I mean, I thought that they were going to be able to tread water. I thought that they were going to have some ups and downs. I thought there was going to be some inconsistencies, but there are none. I mean, I think the two things you can look at is Nestor's performances on the road, which might end up being a fluky thing. You know, it could just be a stretch where he just is kind of, his routine is off or whatever it is, doesn't like the mounds in some of the stadiums that he's been pitching on the road. And Stroman and his mechanics, which if you take him by his word, if it is just a mechanical issue that he's kind of been fighting through, that's going to be resolved at some point, and he should be able to perform at the level that we're all expecting him to. And even then, he's still putting in decent performances to good performances, depending on which start you want to look at. So I didn't expect this level of performance. I think Carlos Rodon is really starting to figure things out with his new arsenal, which I think is a big development for them. I think that when he pitched against Minnesota, the use of the changeup was really impressive. So now you have potentially four pitches that he can rely on. And the thing that I liked about his start, he identified immediately. I can't remember who was catching him. It might have been Wells. They both identified immediately that the changeup was working and was really effective, and they didn't go away from it, which I liked. And there was a good sign of pitchability, in my opinion. And I think we deserve some credit for pointing this out early on in the podcast with Clark Schmidt. I mean, if he keeps this up, he should be considered for the All-Star team. I mean, that's how well he's pitching now. And to give eight innings with a pitch count around 100 against an aggressive lineup, a good lineup that, as we mentioned earlier, the team had won 12 straight at one point in recent times. Clark Schmidt's been amazing. Just, you know, when you consider the context and where he was at last year, and, you know, he had growth, but he's very clearly taking the next step. And that's somebody that you had pointed out very early on when we started this podcast.
Yeah, he's been very impressive. You know, even dating back to last year, just talking to Matt Blake, some of the other pitching coaches that the Yankees have, the other pitchers that they have, a lot of them were just talking about how they believe that Clark could take that next step. Saw it in spring up close when I was down there in Tampa. And he's just one of those guys. I did a story on him before his Tampa start. He's just one of those guys who has embraced. I know some of the older fans out there may start shivering, but he is certainly one of those guys who has embraced analytics. And what I found interesting in talking with Clark about that when I did that story is he wasn't always like that. He certainly was one of those people who was like, you know, you have to have more human feel in the game. You know, it should be more human feel than, you know, spreadsheets or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, he straight up told me it's like the data has really taken his career from, you know, someone who may be in the bullpen, kind of a quad A pitcher, honestly, a couple of years ago, like someone who was on the fringe of, you know, major league. Yeah, he can probably start. But all the numbers that the Yankees showed him, especially this offseason, when it came to his sweeper and his knuckle curve that they were talking about in the game today, you know, they had those close-ups of like how he was gripping the curveball. And that's new for him this year. And that was basically done with the data in mind. Like they saw that if he gripped the baseball a certain way, that he probably would have better results. And obviously he's had better results on both his curveball, which is his best strikeout pitch, and his sweeper, which is moving more horizontally this year. And those two pitches have really led to him having this kind of breakout year for the Yankees. And honestly, along with Luis Gil, I mean, he's been one of their two best starters, which I don't think anybody would have expected that. I don't think anybody would have expected Heal also to be in that conversation. We've talked about him a lot, but you know, you look ahead when Gerrit Cole comes back, it's going to be a really tough decision. Like, I still think it's going to be Luis Heal to the bullpen, just because the Yankees aren't going to have him throw 150 plus innings coming off of Tommy John. But it's also tough because it's like, how do you take someone like him out of the rotation? But then you also look at it as like, well, who are you supposed to take out of the rotation if it's not Heal? You're not going to take out Clark Schmidt if he's going to continue pitching like this. He has a 2.5 ERA. You just mentioned, you know, possible All-Star game for him, which I don't think is a crazy thing to say. You know, Stroman is making, I believe, like $15, $16 million. He's not coming out of the rotation. Nestor has been fine. I don't think he's going to come out of the rotation either. So, like, it has to be Luis Gil. And the Yankees also haven't done six-man rotations in the past when they've had people healthy. So I don't think that they would do that either. Maybe they would, but they've had several opportunities in the past few years to go to a six-man rotation, and they just don't. So I still think it would be Luis Gil to the bullpen. And again, it's a really good problem to have if we're talking about, you know, multiple guys who are, you're like, I don't like, I mean, everybody in the rotation where you're like, this guy shouldn't be coming out of the rotation. That's an unbelievable problem to have if you're Aaron Boone and you're making these decisions.
Yeah, I'm curious about the Cole thing, and I'm wondering if they kind of have like a hybrid plan, because we don't really know yet how they're going to handle Cole in terms of just usage, innings limits early on, pitch inning limits. I know the immediate reaction to that would be, well, they're probably, if Gerrit Cole is healthy, they're not going to put any limitations on him. But I think that he's so crucial to their title hopes this year that it might behoove them to, at least at the beginning for a couple starts, just kind of put some ceiling on him so that he can like ease his way into the season, because obviously he's super competitive. He's going to be juiced up. He's going to be amped up, and they might have to protect him from himself a little bit just when he's like thrown in the fire of the season. So maybe they do go with a six-man rotation just because it's Cole, not anybody else. So it could be that they do that the first couple of times through and they can still utilize Gil. But I think one element to this conversation that they have to weigh, or in my opinion, they should weigh, is once they get to the point of Cole's return, they have to project a little bit. I mean, I think we both believe this is going to be a playoff team, and they might want to start figuring out sooner than later how they can construct their pitching staff to attack October. And if Gil can make the adjustment to being a bullpen weapon in the playoffs, or potential bullpen weapon in the playoffs, it might be good on their part, even though he's pitching fantastic in the rotation, to start getting him to understand his routine in the bullpen, how to attack people in the bullpen, the difference between being a starter and a reliever, coming back after a day or two during the season, so that by the time October comes, he can be really effective for them and shorten games for them potentially. So I think part of the calculus here isn't just what happens in the regular season, but looking ahead to October and figuring out the best way to construct that staff so that they're as imposing a staff in its entirety as it could possibly be. And I think out of all the starters, it's very easy to see that Gil is the one that has the most potential to be the most imposing piece that, if moved to the bullpen, can make a huge difference for the team in October. So I think this can't just be a short-term answer or conversation whenever Cole comes back, but I think they're going to have to look a couple months down the road to see how can they best position themselves to make a run in October.
Yeah, that's a great point to make. You know, they're 15 games over 500. I fully expect them to be a playoff team. I think the last time I checked, they were 6.5 games ahead of the Red Sox, they're 7 games ahead of the Red Sox now, who are in third place.
That team's not very good. So
I wouldn't say they're not very good. I mean, I think they're fine. I wouldn't say like they're like outstanding or anything. I think they're fine. I think they're exceeding expectations. I think I'll say that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the American League is open this year. It's really, you know, the Yankees and the Orioles are clearly the two best teams in the American League. And then it's like everybody else. You know, this Twins team, if you're a Yankees fan and you're watching this, these three games, are you scared of the Twins? I don't think so.
Right.
I didn't see anything. We've seen Tampa now in two series. If that team makes it, they should not be scared of Tampa. This is not a good Tampa team. This is certainly not a good Tampa team. I'm curious to see Seattle come in for four games this starting on Monday. But, I mean, just because of their pitching, Seattle's pitching is absurd. They have a staff that rivals the Yankees. So I'm curious to see how their pitching is and how their hitting is. The Rangers have so many guys on the injured list, but I think they'll be a team that will certainly be in the mix. But, you know, this really feels like one of those years that, you know, the Yankees can do something in October. You know, in the past few years when they've been in it, it's like, going in, they're not the best team or they're not the second best team. You know, the Astros clearly had a huge gap on them for, you know, the past 6-7 years running. So this really feels like the year for the Yankees to, you know, possibly make some damage. The Orioles are still young. They're a good team, but, you know, the Yankees have a lot of experience, a lot of veterans on this team. So they certainly should be looking ahead to October, but it's also May 16th and it's still very, very early to be making those decisions. But when Cole comes back, we're probably talking at best mid-June, which I still think is probably a little too early. So at that point, there's still, you know, half a season left of the games to go. And if you know that Heal is not going to be starting in the playoffs, it's probably best to move him to the bullpen as early as possible, like you were saying, because, you know, sometimes a different role affects pitchers and you don't know until you actually try it out. That was one thing that I thought was interesting in 2022 is they had a huge lead in the division and they weren't really experimenting to see like what could make sense for October. Like they had a huge lead in the AL East. Obviously they lost it a little bit near the end, but I was thinking like it's at that point, it's like, why not experiment? Like they had Jameson Taillon, I remember, come out of the bullpen. And it's like, if you know Taillon is not starting in the playoffs, why not have him pitch a couple games out of the bullpen, throw 2-3 innings. I believe he came in an extra inning game against Cleveland and it didn't go well. But it's like, if you know you're going to have Taillon come out of the bullpen at some point, why not just experiment? So if the Yankees get to a point later the season where it's clear they're making the playoffs and, you know, there's no chance of possibly blowing it, you know, they should try different things or different configurations to get at least some experience before October. But again, we're still a long ways away from that.
But what's interesting with that example that you bring up is that's the same summer that they traded Jordan Montgomery for Harrison Bader. And they made the trade partly because they said Jordan Montgomery wasn't going to be in their playoff rotation and it was midsummer. Mm-hmm. So they have those conversations internally because that led to a trade that, you know, came out of nowhere and, you know, really changed the complexion of that team. And, you know, we know how everything went down after that, but they clearly have those conversations at some point in the summer. So, I mean, if I agree with you, I mean, I think they should experiment, but I think to us, it might seem like there's a lot of time, but for the Yankees, it feels like they actually do throw these ideas around in some form or fashion in the middle of the year because they made a trade based off of it. So, and the other thing too is obviously health plays a role, but looking down the line, I'm very curious to know or see if whatever deals the Yankees are going to try to make as well, you know, do they surprise us and try to get another starter so that they could put Heal in the bullpen? Like, do they just try to get a big piece like Mason Miller? I don't think he's going to be a Yankee. I don't think the A's are going to trade him unless, you know, the doors get blown off the hinges with a package, but maybe they go big game hunting for a reliever, you know, by the trade deadline. There's so many things that are up in the air, but the important thing is that right now they're putting themselves in a position to have those options and to possibly experiment. And the wins that they're banking now, it's just giving them more leeway for those decisions down the road. So, you know, bringing it back to this Minnesota series, these wins are crucial, you know, when you look at them in a big picture bird's eye view context, because it allows them some wiggle room to make decisions to make the team better, or to like really identify areas that they can attack roster wise to put themselves in a position down the road. So we had said this before, you know, the cliche that you can't win divisions early in the season, but you can lose them. It's the same thing with playoff spots, that right now they're not in a position where they're going to have to scramble in the second half of the season to fight for a playoff spot. They're playing, so I mean, they're 15 games above 500 now, which I can't really remember that many Yankees teams that got off to such a good start. You know, it always feels like they have these frustrating Aprils and then they figure it out later in the year, or they have like a really good start, but you can see someone making the case that it's fool's gold. I don't think that that's the case here. I mean, you and I both keep saying it. Their record feels like very accurate for how they've been performing. So, 100%. I mean, they're really setting themselves up well for down the road, as long as they stay generally healthy. I mean, that's always the caveat with this team and any other team, but especially the Yankees. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the conversation we're having now, I think we can have it because they're banking these wins, you know, and there isn't like this desperation that's going on.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, this is a really good team. I know people were freaking out during the Baltimore series about, oh, this offense stinks. And it's like, where are those people now?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are they now? It's at the time, even it was a stupid conversation to be having. And I mean, Aaron Judge's OPS is like 950 now. Right. And how many tweets did you see of people saying like, oh my God, this contract's is already starting to age poorly. He's done. He's hurt. I mean, as I said several episodes ago, it seemed like it was a timing issue, just looking at the metrics, and it turns out it was just a timing issue with Judge.
Right.
Now he's crushing the ball.
Let's go to a break and then we can talk more about Judge, because then we can really get into it. So we'll take this quick break. We'll come back, talk about Judge, and talk about some other things as we freestyle our way through this episode 12 of the Views from 314 Feet podcast. And we're back. It's the Views from 314 Feet podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. It's Randy. It's Chris. So before we went to the break, we started to have a conversation about Aaron Judge. And the both of us had said repeatedly, chill out. He's going to be fine. He's going to be a monster again. As you noted multiple times, it was probably a timing issue. We could tell that he couldn't get to the outside pitch. Something was off mechanically. It wasn't because, you know, he's 32 and a large man and like we don't have a comp, so he naturally must be declining. You know, it wasn't because of the contract. He didn't need to be demoted. It did not appear that he was hurt. He was playing center field every day and like running in the gaps and like making great catches in the gaps. I mean, I think that was all you needed to see to know that he was healthy. But I'm sure you get this more than I do just on Twitter. But, you know, the reactions to Judge's slump felt very over the top and panicky and ridiculous. So, as you asked, where are they now when they talk about Aaron Judge?
Yeah, they're nowhere to be found. There's nothing to be to complain about. Yankee Twitter is a little less interesting when they're actually winning games and they're playing well overall. Like, they've scored the most runs in baseball. They've allowed the fewest runs in baseball. Their farm system is good. They have, you know, lots of prospects that they could trade to even upgrade at some spots if they wanted to. Like, there's not much to complain about. And I know Yankee fans certainly love to complain about everything. And
not all.
A lot of things.
Yeah.
I certainly love the passion, but like some of it, it's just like, it's absurd. You know, I think fans get so caught up in like the individual games. It's not the NFL where every game, like certainly it matters because there's only 17 games you're playing. There's 162 games in baseball. So like the one game or a three game series, like I'm sure if the Yankees lose 2 of 3 this weekend to the White Sox, it's going to be back to, you know,
oh yeah,
Cashman hasn't done enough. Like this team, you know, it's a fluke. Here comes 2022 all over again. Like, I mean, I'm ready for it because it's that's baseball. Like they're going to lose 2 of 3 this weekend and people are going to be freaking out come Monday. But this team is certainly really good. And Aaron Judge has shown in the past couple of weeks that he is totally fine. Last I checked, he had the 7th best OPS in baseball, actually a higher OPS than Juan Soto, who we'll discuss a little later. And, you know, people were, you know, ready to give him the MVP trophy, and Judge has already surpassed him in literally like the last 2 weeks. You know, Soto's been struggling a little bit in these past few games. I think he's now like 3 for his last 27. I jokingly tweeted that he needs to, you know, start getting ready to learn Scrantonese because, you know, that's the Yankee fan. You know, this guy stinks. Like he can't get $500 million now. But yeah, Judge is totally fine. My God, like the home run he hit the other day, 467 in the upper deck, the home run he hit against Houston, 470. He looks like himself. And if this continues, he will certainly, alongside Juan Soto, which I still expect him to have a really good season, like those two guys can certainly be top five in the MVP conversation. And if you have two guys in the MVP conversation, you're talking about having, you know, one of the best teams overall, which is what we've been seeing through the first 45 games.
So I'm just doing a quick search as you're talking, and I'm looking at Aaron Judge's ranking with a WRC plus. So I just picked like a random date range. So I'd basically picked the beginning of the season to April 20th. I could probably go a little later, but I knew that that was an area or a time when he was struggling. So in that date range from the beginning of the season to April 20th, which was close to a month, Aaron Judge was 114th in WRC plus. So he had a 101 WRC plus. So now he is 10th in the league and he has like a 167 WRC plus. So in a couple weeks, he's gone from 114th to 10th. And you can look at other statistics and metrics to demonstrate just like how insane this run he's been on. But that was just one that like I just quickly just did a quick search for that period of time when everybody was like well entrenched and freaking out about Aaron Judge and sending out tweets about demoting him and all this other stuff, which will be an all time absurd tweet. Like, and there were multiple people doing it. So it's like a group of people that will go in the Hall of Fame for like complete nonsense. But now he went from one, let me see where he was again, just 114th in the league.
Yeah.
To 10th today as we speak on May 16th. He's an incredible player, and it was only a matter of time. You know, as again, the caveat is he healthy or not? And to me, if you're playing every day and you're playing center field in Yankee Stadium, you're healthy. They wouldn't do that if there was something going on. He would have been DHing, or they would have figured out a way to get him on the field but kind of protect him. He was running all over the place in center field, so I didn't think he was hurt. But to have that big of a jump in such a short amount of time, I mean, he's an incredible baseball player. And they have, with him and Juan Soto, they have two top 10 guys in WRC+.
I mean, they have one of the best overall offenses. And Verdugo's calmed down a little bit in these past couple weeks. Rizzo's hitting well. You know, Gleyber had a good series against Minnesota. We'll see if he can continue that. But, you know, just having Soto and Judge, be at the top of the leaderboard in WRC plus. Obviously the Yankees are going to be as a whole near the top of the leaderboard too. They're still second behind the Dodgers. And I expect the Dodgers will have the best offense in the sport this year. Shohei's on another level. It's crazy to see what he's been doing, and Mookie Betts too. But again, if you have the best offense in the American League and you combine that with what's been the best rotation in the American League as well, you're talking about a team that could certainly go deep in October. And again, like I mentioned, they do have several prospects in the minor leagues that are viewed favorably. They have room to get better when we're, you know, discussing the trade deadline at the end of July. Like there's still some room to improve on the margins. You know, maybe they want to upgrade third base. Third base is, you know, a weak spot for them. You know, maybe they, you know, call up Colorado, who's going nowhere. Colorado always makes stupid trades. You know, maybe they'll, you know, be interested in Ryan McMahon, who's under contract at a reasonable rate for, I believe, the next 5 years. Yep. Pittsburgh, Brian Hayes, Charlie Hayes's son, not really having a good season. Maybe the Yankees feel like they can revive him a little bit, an excellent defender. So like there are definitely ways for the Yankees to improve even further than what they are now, which should be a scary thought for other teams in the American League.
Yeah, I mean, this is super early, obviously, but we're riffing here. I think Ryan McMahon would be a great pickup. I mean, I think depending on what the Yankees want to focus on, if they are looking at a position player, you know, if it's more of glove first or bat first or lefty bat versus righty bat, you know, we don't really know totally how they want to evaluate this, but I think Ryan McMahon would be a nice piece, because the other thing too is they need a long-term third baseman. So this isn't just like a 2024 situation with third base. They don't really have a third baseman moving forward. And I guess you could put your eggs in the DJ LeMahieu basket, but I'm not sure why you would do that anymore.
No, they should not be doing that.
Yeah. So I think even if they don't necessarily want to get a third baseman for this run, I think it would be smart to at least consider it, just because you're trying to adjust your future, you know, and maybe it's something they kind of kick the can down the road. But I mean, if somebody like Ryan McMahon's available, I would jump on it now. You know, they just have to, it obviously would help you for this potential deep playoff run this year, but they need a third baseman, period. So, I mean, I think at some point, you know, it's a position that a lot of people don't talk about in terms of the future, just because, you know, LeMahieu's hurt. There's been focus on that. Cabrera's done pretty well in the starts that he's had. Birdie's been solid, I guess. So there isn't a lot of chatter about it, but I do think at some point they're going to have to address it either this year or next year, because they really do need a third baseman. And with the lineup, I think the great thing is just the depth that they have. You mentioned that Soto has been slumping. Verdugo's kind of come down to earth. I think he'll be fine. Like, I'm not concerned about him, and obviously not concerned about Soto, but there are other guys picking up the slack. Like Volpe's starting to hit again. Volpe started off the game with a home run. He's starting to figure things out again, and he's being an impact player. Judge is obviously taking off. Austin Wells is hitting. Trevino's hitting. Glaber's starting to hit. Rizzo's been hitting. So the great thing about this lineup, and it reminds me of the older Yankee teams, there's always somebody that's like picking up the slack. And you know that the team is struggling when there isn't anybody that's going. Or there isn't somebody that, you know, when you get to his spot or maybe two guys' spot, it's like, okay, I think there's an opportunity for him to cash in or make something happen. And we could just look to last year when, if Glaber wasn't hitting, there was nobody in that lineup that was going to contribute. But this year, Soto slumps, okay, Judge picks him up. You know, Judge was slumping, Soto picked him up. Verdugo picked other guys up. They just have so much depth right now that, you know, one guy is not necessarily playing up to expectations or playing to his level, but there's somebody else or there are two other guys that you can rely on, excuse me, to come through and really contribute and make an impact. So, yeah, I mean, they're just like firing on all cylinders. It's if you're a Yankees fan, you should be pretty excited about what's going on right now.
I totally agree. And just one more point on the third base situation. It's I feel like also important to note that Rizzo has a club option for 2025 for $17 million. I believe his buyout is $6 million. So if the Yankees wanted to, you know, let's say they upgrade third base and, you know, get someone like McMahon, they can have DJ slide over to first base next year. Who knows what the state of his foot is going to be. It's obviously a less demanding position to play than third base. So that could be one way to, you know, shave a little bit of salary, move DJ over to first base. Rizzo has done a good job, but, you know, he's getting older, and I don't know if you want to commit to him long-term. I think he's going to be 36 next year too. So that is one way that the Yankees could maneuver it if they did decide to upgrade third base, and we're talking looking ahead for just roster construction purposes. So that's something to also note.
So they're playing well, obviously. I mean, we've been giving them their flowers throughout this entire episode, but is there an area that gives you any kind of pause or concern right now, just given how they're playing, or is it just things are just going that well and, you know, whatever little hiccups they have are just the natural kind of ebbs and flows of a baseball season?
Yeah, I mean, I think things are going really well right now. You know, we talked about the bullpen. I think they could certainly upgrade in the bullpen. You know, I still think like that is a little shaky. Luke Weaver's been a revelation. Clay Holmes mm-hmm. has the same ERA as you and I, which is zero. Mm-hmm. So like they still have good things going on back there, but they could certainly use, you know, one or two more guys who are trusted. Like you look at the Astros bullpen in 22, it felt like in the ALCS, they just had guy after guy coming in. And it was like, damn, like the Yankees don't have any hope of hitting this guy. Then the next guy comes in, they have no hope of hitting this guy. And then by the time the ninth inning comes, it's Ryan Pressly and you're screwed because, you know, he's not giving up the game. So like the Yankees could certainly use, you know, a couple more guys in the bullpen who were shut down. But also, you know, the teams that are probably going to be selling are bad teams. And who knows how many of those relief, like everybody's going to be looking at those relievers from the Marlins, the Rockies, you know, the White Sox, the Pirates, the Reds, you know, there's only going to be a certain amount of teams that are really bad. And with the added wild card, what you saw last year, it's hard to trade now with, because everybody feels like they're in the race still when the trade deadline comes around. So I'm curious to see how this year is going to be and how many teams are actually going to be selling. It's a good problem to have for the Yankees with how they're playing right now, though.
I agree. So let's take one more break and then we'll come back and wrap things up. And we're back. It's Randy. It's Chris. It's the Views from 314 Feet podcast. Just doing an episode to kind of recap what's been going on with the Yankees. We've had some great guests over the last couple of episodes, and we wanted to get back to talking about the Yankees. And also, you know, they just swept the Twins, so why not record an episode? Might as well just do it. So before we get out of here, there was something that was brought up during the Yes broadcast today in the Twins game that I'm pretty sure caught everyone's attention, which is Jack Curry's podcast. His latest guest is Yankees owner or majority owner Hal Steinbrenner, and this is obviously a paraphrase, I didn't write this down, but essentially Hal let Jack know that he is open to speaking with Juan Soto and Juan Soto's agent Scott Boras during the season to see if there's any chance of an extension taking place. Obviously that breaks from the norm, but Hal himself said that, you know, this is a special situation. This isn't like any other player. He also said that he wanted Juan to settle in and take everything in and, you know, focus on winning and all the things that are necessary for a Yankee player. But he did not rule out the chance of initiating or having a conversation with Scott Boras pertaining to a Juan Soto contract extension with the Yankees. And we've talked about this multiple times over multiple episodes that we just didn't think that this was an option, especially when you hear from Cashman. But now that Hal has kind of thrown it out there, you know, your ears perk up, your eyes open, and now there should be discourse about what could potentially happen. And Jack Curry followed up with a tweet reporting on a text that he received from Scott Boras saying that Scott is always willing to speak to Hal. So your thoughts, Chris, on this little bit of a bombshell that was dropped casually on a Thursday afternoon during a Yankees Twins game.
So the timing of the Steinbrenner interview, I should say that Hal is expected to talk with, likely will talk with beat reporters next week. The owners, the MLB owners meetings are in New York. He always talks to the reporters. So definitely a good move for Yes to get ahead of the beat getting the news. As a beat reporter myself, I was like, of course they're doing this because, you know, it's Yes gets all the, you know, the mentions, the traffic, all that. But, you know, I will say that Hal is expected to talk at some point next week during the MLB owners meetings. As for the Soto stuff, you know, I still don't really put much stock into it. Honestly, it's the same. It's kind of the same thing that Hal told us in February when he was saying to us, when we were asking about Soto at that time, you know, he was saying, hopefully it's not, you know, just a 1-year relationship with Soto. We obviously want to keep him long-term. So like that part isn't necessarily news to me. And also Scott saying that he's always willing to talk to Hal also really isn't news to me either, because that is an agent's job, is to talk with the team that your client is on to try to get the most money possible. Obviously the Yankees have one of the deepest pockets in the sport. So I didn't really make much of that, to be honest with you. I know fans are freaking out. I would say that it's basically still status quo. Like it's not, an extension is very, 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 very unlikely to happen. My dog is chewing on a bone right now, so if you hear that, I apologize. but I would still say it's very unlikely that a Soto extension gets done. Scott Boras almost always takes his clients, especially the highest profile ones, to free agency. Soto has been with the Yankees for not even 2 months now. He has no prior relationship with the Yankees, unlike Jose Altuve, who signed an extension before the season. Obviously, he is Mr. Astro, and he's going nowhere. He's going to spend the rest of his career with the Astros. So it wasn't a likely possibility that he was going to hit free agency. As for Soto, I fully expect him to go to free agency because, as we said on the last episode with Andy Martino, the Mets are going to be involved. And if you get an extension now with Soto, you have no idea what Steve Cohen is going to do. Steve may, you know, be totally pissed at the end of the year and says, you know, screw it, I am signing everybody. And he can't because he has all the money. He has the most money out of all the owners. So if he wants to give Juan Soto $800 million next year, there's nothing stopping him from doing so. So if I was Scott Boras, I'm certainly taking my client to free agency. I'm not signing an extension. And I still think that is the likeliest outcome for Soto and the Yankees, is nothing will get done in the season. You know, Soto, as we said with Martino, he is very good with his words. You know, I saw after the game today, you know, he said his door is always open, which is what he's been saying since we first talked with him back in February. So that also is nothing new. So, you know, anytime you mention Soto and free agency and the possibility of a long-term future, fans are going to freak out. I would, not to like, you know, rain on the parade here, but today's update from Jack Hurry isn't really anything to get yourself worked up over right now. You know, it's expected that Howe is going to do what it takes to sign Soto. Obviously, he is a generational player. He's 25 years old. You do what you can to sign that guy. We've said it basically every episode. The fan base has taken to him. They kind of have to, you know, sign this guy. Otherwise, fans are going to revolt, especially if the Mets sign him. Because it feels like it feels like it's those two teams like at the top of the Soto sweepstakes already. And if you lose one of your best players to the Mets and you're the Yankees, like it's going to be a disaster. So I would just say to those fans who are, you know, fully expecting Soto now to sign a contract by June 1st, slow down a little bit because it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I will quote Fat Joe here and say yesterday's price is not today's price if I'm Juan Soto. So, I mean, the Yankees could try to bring up a contract extension or at least initiate talks. But if I'm Juan Soto, you know, the price on May 16th, let's say, will not be the same as the price in late November, early December, if I win MVP and I bring you a championship. So it's just not the best business, I'll say, for Juan Soto to sign an extension when he has a chance to bring home some personal hardware and team hardware. And that just adds a couple zeros to the contract at the end of the year. So I don't see it happening either. I do think it's good. Let me rephrase this. I think Hal saying this on the surface is a good PR move, but it's also it's also a risky PR move, because if he doesn't sign him, people are going to roast him for saying the things that he's been saying up until this point. And not that it's fair or unfair, but again, we talked about fan reaction in general. I don't think there will be logic at play here. I think they'll just say, well, you said you wanted to sign him and you didn't get it done. And they'll just look for any kind of hole to throw it in his face. I also think having extension talks during the season could also backfire. And it might be better for the Yankees to just wait until the end of the season to have those talks. Because what if they give him a Aaron Judge type low ball offer and Juan Soto's just like, what is this? Like, is this how you value me? Even though I've already made a big impact, not just on the field, but on the franchise, on the city, the fan base. You know, you really have to come with like an already high offer to make these conversations make sense. Because if you do anything or send anything that isn't representative of his past performance and a projection of what he can be 26, 27, 28, 29, 30 years old, you don't know how Juan Soto is going to take that. You know what I mean? Like, I know like everybody is aware of how much money he rejected from the Nationals. I do think, and yes, mention this, that's a little different situation, because if it's the Nationals, I'm sure deferred money was a part of that conversation as well. And, you know, it's 15 years and whatever the contract details were. But if you offer a contract extension offer in the season, this has to be a very high offer. Or you're risking Juan Soto saying, well, this is, if you value me at this, how can I have any confidence that when the season's over, you're going to be able to match the value that I have for myself? And I can shop this deal to the Mets and say, look, man, like this is what they offer me. Beat this by X and we have a deal. You know what I mean? So I'm not sure, unless the Yankees are just really, really ready to put all their chips on the table, which I'm not sure how they would even be able to do that without knowing what the actual market is. I'm not sure that it's beneficial to the Yankees to have these extension talks. You might as well just wait because there's a risk attached to it that I'm not sure is worth the attempt, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. And you know, Hal certainly saying that he's going to do what it takes to get Soto signed is, you know, great PR because as we see today, fans are freaking out. They're already, you know, getting tattoos of Juan Soto's face on their backs. So
right.
It's certainly the right thing to say. And, you know, like you said, it also does, you know, open up the possibility of some risk involved because, you know, fans are the first to throw comments back at people when they make statements like that, especially again, if, you know, the Yankees offer $500 million, the Mets offer $700 million, and, you know, Hal doesn't want to go that far, then fans are going to be like, well, you said you were going to do what it takes. So it's certainly risky, but you kind of have to do it because, you know, the Yankee fans are very informed. They know what's going on. And, you know, they're going to be upset if you don't say that. So it's kind of a lose-lose situation because it's like you have to say it and then it may blow up in your face and then you say it now and then everybody's freaking out. So it's just like a big storm. Like we were going to ask these questions anyway in a few days. So like he was going to be asked it at some point. And Hal knows that. Like, you know, the Yankees are very smart when it comes to media. Jason Zillow obviously prepared Hal when he was going on Jack Curry's podcast and, you know, said, you're going to be asked about Soto, obviously, be ready for that. You're going to be asked about the start of the season, be ready for that. So it's like it's nothing like out of the ordinary of what he said today. So that's why I would just say to those people who are already freaking out, it's like just have some sort of caution of just the state of the situation. It's May 16th. Scott Boras is his agent. He doesn't have a prior relationship with the Yankees like Aaron Judge did, like Jose Altuve did, who's another client. So just be wary of that when you're discussing Soto in his future.
Yeah, I mean, I would love if they signed a contract today. I mean,
well, of course.
I mean, you know, that would be amazing. But yeah, I agree with you. I just think that there's some risks attached to it, and it in some ways it is a lose-lose. In some ways, it's not. You know, I just feel like it's complicated because of everything involved and how much money is involved. I also have skepticism of whenever Hal says, I'll do whatever it takes, because he almost always has a limit to whatever it takes.
Oh, we saw that with Yamamoto.
Yeah, I mean, that was exactly what I was going to bring up. I mean, I know people want to play the whole he wanted to go to LA game, and that very well could be true. You know, I think whatever Yamamoto said after he signed is he's not going to say, no, I didn't want to sign with the Dodgers after he signed with the Dodgers. So I don't put much weight into that. And I know people want to play the AAV game, but at the end of the day, the Yankees came in third and they were behind the Dodgers and the Mets. Like ultimately people care about the total guarantee that's at the end of the contract. And the Yankees just didn't match that. You can go back to Aaron Judge. I mean, if Judge and Hal don't have that conversation, I mean, Aaron Judge could have been a San Diego Padre, you know, and I think Hal has his limits. There's, you know, and I think that there are very special instances where he'll go past that limit, but he has a limit and he's going into it with that limit. So his interpretation of whatever it takes comes with some fiscal awareness, you know. So I think whatever it takes might mean to me, you, or whoever's listening, or any Yankees fan, I think that is very different from whatever it takes for Hal Steinbrenner. Like he just looks at the world differently when it comes to those things. So, you know, I think it's great we're talking about it. I'm happy that he said it, because for me, like, the PR is worth it. You know, and it has us talking and gives me confidence that the organization really wants him, which is always a good thing. But the specifics of what's said, I think, are up for debate and what that really means when it comes down to it.
Yeah, I think you made all great points right there. I don't really have anything else to add. It's, you know, we're a month and a half into the season. There's still a long way to go. I still fully expect Soto to sign in the winter. Whatever the number is, the Yankees are obviously going to be one of the teams in the mix. And that's really like all you could hope for if you're a Yankees fan right now. They're going to make a strong offer. They're going to be one of the finalists no matter what, unless Soto hates New York, which he doesn't. So that's really all you can ask for right now. The Yankees are also winning, and that's very important to Soto. So as long as they continue winning, as long as he continues liking the Yankees, which so far he has, they're going to be in the mix. And it's then on Boris and Soto to decide if that's where they want to be for the rest of the rest of his career.
Well said. And I think we'll wrap up the podcast on that note. Any final words before we get out of here?
I'm excited to talk about the Yankees losing 2 of 3 on Monday.
If they lose 2 of 3 to the White Sox, we could burn this episode, because then, I mean, everything we said was just not on point.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. And then excited for the Knicks, hopefully, to close it out on tomorrow night.
Yeah, hopefully when we record again, both New York teams, your New York team and my New York team, will advance to the Eastern Conference Finals, and there'll be, you know, more sports to watch in New York beyond just the Yankees and that other team in Queens that we won't acknowledge, who has, for whatever reason, is like super sensitive. I say anything about the team in Queens and somebody's always mad. I could say their team colors are orange and blue, and like people are pissed that I said it was red or something. Thank you for listening to the latest episode of the Views from 314 Feet podcast. You can find us on all of your favorite podcast platforms. You can also find us on YouTube. The channel is the same name as the podcast. Please subscribe there. Subscribe on your favorite podcast platform if you haven't already. We greatly appreciate it. The Yankees are good. Things are good in Yankees land. Hopefully that keeps up. Be positive about what this team is doing, because it's it looks like it's going to be a fun season. So we will wrap this up, and we will be back with a new episode next Tuesday. And until then, we will speak to you next week.